Welcome to the Child Discipleship Podcast. My name is Melanie Hester, and I'm so glad that we're spending time together today. The conversation you're about to listen to is between myself, Awana content manager, Shauna Merlin, and Julie Lowe. And if you're wondering, wait, I think I've heard this conversation before, you haven't. It's another one that we had with her where we wrestle down questions that so many families have, like what safeguards should I have in place for my kids? And if I don't have any in place already, is it too late? Julie is a licensed professional counselor, a registered play therapist supervisor, and most recently authored the book Safeguards, Shielding Our Homes and Equipping Our Kids. Here's that conversation with Julie. Julie, talk to us about just what led you to the point of even wanting to write this book. Give us a little bit of background.
Sure. So I speak to churches all the time. Well, I'm a counselor, so I work on cases of abuse regularly. I go out to churches and talk about it and do trainings. And one of the questions that kept coming up is preventative measures. How can a church take preventative measures? And there's great organizations out there. We talk about policies and reporting and running clearances, but that doesn't really get to educating and equipping. And so one of the things I found myself repeatedly saying is if you really want to protect against abuse and hard things happening, you need to train in the home. We need to equip parents to know how to educate their children in ways that raise confident, competent children. And so that became the message I found myself saying over and over again. You need to talk about it from the pulpit, meaning publicly, but you also need, it needs to start in the home.
Absolutely. So Julie, something I said to Melanie before we began today was that I read your book and I literally held it up to my husband and I said, I wish we would have read this 10 years ago. So we have three teenagers and I think there was just something eye-opening about there. You know, there's a lot of topics when it comes to safety that we either don't know how to talk about, or we don't know that we're supposed to talk about them, or maybe it's awkward to talk about them with our kids. But there literally does come a time where it feels like it's either too late or maybe you waited too long to have some of those conversations. And so I can say that we very much saw that in our household, was that this, we needed to have the education and the equipping in our home so that we knew how to prepare our kids for different things that they're going to face.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually one of the points I love to make over and over again is, you know, you can never start too early, but it's also never too late. So it might be harder, to go back and have those conversations, or it might feel after the fact, but anytime we're building bridges with our kids and anytime we're equipping them, it's never too late. You know, many of my kids are in college now, and there's still issues they need to be equipped for. There's still things they need the practice and the influence in. So it's never too late.
I love that. Let's talk about for a second the space where the home is just really waffling around, like, where do we go? What do we start with? And this idea of like, today can be the day, but also there's a wide variety of kids' ages in a family. And so like, what does that look like? How does a family try to help this wide breadth of ages of kids who are accessing different things, whether they're homeschooled, whether they're in public school, whether they have a device, whether they don't have a device? Like, what is a parent like to do, and where do they start?
Yeah, that's a great question, because developmentally how we talk about things will be different, but what we talk about isn't actually too different. Though as kids get older, obviously you're dealing with things like dating and safety driving and being alone, things that you wouldn't with a toddler or an elementary age child. But the principles behind it are the same. And those principles are that I always want to talk to my child about respecting others and being respected, whether that's privacy in a bathroom or bathing, whether that's babysitting or being babysat, whether that's what you do about sleepovers or independence or play dates. I want to be equipping my child to be discerning and wise. And that's the foundation of safety skills, is not just, you know, surrounding our kids with high walls and protecting anything from entering in, is actually equipping them to evaluate character, actually it's the opposite, instead of evaluating character, to evaluate behavior and words and actions. And if I can teach that at 4 years old, I can teach that at 14 years old, I can teach that at 24 years old. So the principles of teaching our kids to evaluate people's words and actions, when they grow in doing that, we're raising wise, discerning kids. So the world calls that intuition, you know, sensing danger. I say it's discernment. That's the biblical language we're given.
I love that you're attaching, you've done this 3 or 4 times now, you've attached it to biblical language. You've said that, like, you've used the word modeling. You've talked about discernment. There's things that are connected to our faith. And so will you dive into, like, how does preparing our kids for these things also attach to discipleship?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you can separate it, to be honest. I think the world does. They do things like take safetyism, or the highest goal is to keep your kids to not be abused, where I say safety is a fruit of our highest goal. It's not the highest goal. Our highest goal is to teach our children God and his ways. And that's discipleship, right? It's Deuteronomy 6, whether we're walking along the way, whether we rise, whether we're going to bed at night, whether we're eating dinner, whether we're taking them to a soccer match. Are we talking about the things of the Lord, the everyday conversations? Are we teaching them to look at the world and see it through a biblical worldview? So our ultimate goal is to teach children to know the Lord and his ways. The fruit of that is safety. The fruit of it is discernment. The fruit of it is critical thinking and wisdom on their part. And when you try to do that apart from teaching God and his ways, they actually are more at risk, because the world doesn't make sense, and we're living in a culture that turns good evil and evil good. It's literally the world being turned upside down, as Romans talks about.
My husband and I were just talking about this morning. We were walking through greed and pride and envy and gluttony. We were talking about how these are all things that are egregious sins that talk about, like, in scripture, like do not go this way. And yet so many of these are not just highlighted, but they're celebrated in today's culture. And so what I hear you saying is that we're creating this space where kids are saying no to those things. We're helping them put boundaries around that. We're helping them to, in a culture that says, like, yes, this is okay, they're saying, like, actually, we think differently around how we operate in that. And that includes our use of technology and what our family defines as safe. So yeah, I love the way you said that distinction there is not always going to put them in a scenario where safety in the people around them might disagree.
Yeah. There's an analogy I often use when I'm doing presentations for parents, and I pull up a picture of a mother holding a baby in the pool and teaching them to swim. And that, parents don't just throw their kids into the deep end of the pool, or you shouldn't. It may work for occasionally for one or two, but rarely does it, and it creates a lack of a safe environment. So, you know, a parent gets into the water with their child, usually the shallow end versus the deep end. And then I show a picture of a river, and then a picture of the ocean, and then a picture of a waterfall or raging rapid, and say, would you ever put your child in those waters to teach them to swim? No, you start off in safe ways and you are with them. And that's a great picture of how we build safety, and we build our kids, equipping them. They eventually will be going into rougher waters. They eventually will have to learn to swim against the tide. But we are unwise to do that until they're strong enough to go against the tide. The other concern I have is that culture and what culture is teaching is so antithetical to Christian values now, that we have to ask, are our children strong enough to swim against that tide? which is where issues like technology and cell phone and social media use, way too many Christian parents are throwing their kids into those waters and expecting them to be strong enough because we've taught them, right? But teaching them doesn't mean they're fully equipped yet. It doesn't mean they're able to stand against those tides yet. And so as parents, we've got to really be wise as well and say, are we expecting children to be stronger than they actually are to stand up against some of these things before they're mature enough and wise enough to do so?
So I guess I would ask you, Julie, in the realm of technology, like how do safeguards help us in those moments of just utter depletion to be able to continue to lead our kids in discipleship practices towards Jesus?
Well, on one hand, let me discourage you a bit more by saying what I'm suggesting does require a ton more. So, you know what? We all want the formulas. We want the parenting formula. We want the technology formula. Just give me the formula. And if I do it, then A equals Z or A plus B equals C, instead of saying, you know what? Wisdom and discernment require more than a formula. They require prayer. They require the Spirit. They require me to be actively pursuing my children. Here lies the problem. We live in a fast food society where everything is quick. And what you're hitting on is exhausted parents who work all day. They get up early. They make their kids lunch. They get the kids ready for school. They get them out the door. They rush around all day doing their own jobs. They rush home at night to get the kids, to take them to whatever activities, whether they're church or school or sporting. They get dinner made. They get the laundry in. They feed the dog. They do everything. And by 9 o'clock at night, they want to fall into bed exhausted, hoping that they didn't drop the ball on anything for that day.
Yeah.
Now times that by 7 days a week. Now times that by how many months? And what we begin to do is we begin to live a very fast food mentality, which is I get through the day, I get my sustenance, I communicate everything that needs to be communicated. But sustenance does not equal nourishment. That we're not slowing down life to disciple our children because we can't even get a 5-minute meaningful conversation that isn't about, did you do your homework? Did you do your chores? Did you take a shower? Did you do this? Did you do that? And there are times of life. There are phases we go through. There are weeks we go through where that is fast food settles. Fast food gets you through. But to do that regularly, you erode somebody, you erode lifestyle, you erode relationships, you erode health if we were to live on a fast food diet. And our conversations and our lifestyle are often like that. So that's both discouraging and encouraging, but it also points to the only way we can do this well is when we are fighting against that kind of pace of life. And asking the Lord to give us ways to slow life down so that we can have these kind of conversations, that we can sit and just meaningfully enjoy relationship, conversation, and nurturing and discipleship. We're living in a world where very little discipleship is happening anymore, or we're shuffling it out to the schools or to the church or to the youth groups to do it.
Well, and let's talk about that for just a second, because, you know, I just feel like you just described my life. Like I was listening to you list off these events and I was like, yes, this is me. You know, I'm already thinking about, you know, tennis practice that starts here in a few hours and things like that. But one of the things that we do is we bring in other loving, caring adults around our kids. You know, we have the help of babysitters. We have the help of family friends. We take our kids to church and drop them off there. And so something that you hit on in your book that I would love for us to just kind of slightly switch gears and talk about for a second is keeping our kids safe when they're not with us. And I feel like that was one of the toughest questions when our kids were little is when or if are they allowed to go to a sleepover? When or if are we going to have a babysitter come into our home? When are we comfortable even dropping them off for a church event? Maybe it's at a church that we don't attend, but it's with some friends that they want to go, you know, to a lock-in or to one of those events that they're going to have there. How do we keep our kids safe when they're not with us? What are some safeguards that we can put in place in those types of situations?
So that goes to, we want to equip our kids that as, especially as they get older, their world does get bigger. Their circle of influence gets bigger, and that's normal and natural. So therefore, I need to equip them to know how to navigate. So if the foundation is to know God and his ways, then how do I go about doing that? Well, I teach them then to evaluate people's words and actions. So the typical thing we say is stranger danger, and that drives me crazy that there are still people out there saying that, because we always said to our kids, strangers aren't dangerous. Dangerous people are dangerous. And dangerous people can be strangers or people you know.
Yeah.
Because we know 90% of kids that get abused are abused by somebody they know. So are the strangers the dangerous one? So strangers aren't dangerous. Dangerous people are dangerous. And to say to your kids, dangerous people can be people you know who act nice and polite. They can be strangers. So how do you know somebody's dangerous? Well, first, you know right from wrong. You know God and his ways. Secondly, you learn to evaluate behavior and words, because we're notoriously bad at evaluating character. And scripture tells us deceptive people speak peace with their mouth while evil is in their hearts. Mm-hmm. So we evaluate, is this person asking you to do something right, or is this person asking you to do something wrong? So another huge principle is to tell kids, if your babysitter tells you to do something right and good, you should always obey. If somebody tells you something right and good to do, you should always obey. It doesn't matter if it's a grandparent, a babysitter, a Sunday school teacher, your sibling, because there's a big one, right? Well, you're not the boss of me. Well, if your sibling tells you the right thing to do, you should always listen. It doesn't matter. And I'll joke with my kids, it could be the family dog. If they're telling you the right thing to do, you should always do it. Now, likewise, if somebody tells you the wrong thing to do, you should never listen, and we will support you. This is so important, because in all of my years of parenting, I haven't had to teach my kids to disobey. I've only had to repeatedly teach them to obey. But we can emphasize that so much that we don't teach our kids the skill of defying authority when authority is wrong or immoral or dangerous. So likewise, I say, if somebody tells you the wrong thing to do, you should never listen. Now, you start with your siblings, with their peer group. If they tell you the wrong thing to do, you should never listen, and we'll support you. Then you go to a babysitter or a cousin or a family relative. If the babysitter tells you to do the wrong thing, you should never obey, and we will support you. If your coach, if your teacher. And so what you're instilling in them is, people you know can tell you the wrong thing to do. People in authority can tell you the wrong thing. What's the wrong thing? If it goes against God and his ways. So foundation, God and his ways, evaluating words and actions, is it right or wrong? And then it doesn't matter who it is. You should never listen, and we will support you. So you're building that as kids get older, so that when they're with a babysitter, I'm always practicing, I'm always role-playing. Honey, if the babysitter tells you the wrong thing to do, you should never listen. And my kids will say, oh, she won't tell us the wrong thing to do. Well, good. That's why she's your babysitter. But if she were to tell you the wrong thing to do, what might that be? And I'm getting them to think. I'm getting them to evaluate. And they'll say the typical things, like maybe she gives us an extra dessert and tells us not to tell you. Or maybe she lets us watch a show you don't let us watch, right? Good. Well, if the babysitter did that, you should never listen, and we will support you. Then I go to the silly and the ridiculous. Well, what if the babysitter told you to go running down the street clucking like a chicken or barking like a dog? And they're laughing and being silly and saying, well, they would tell me they would never do that. I'm like, good. But if they did, you never have to listen. What if the babysitter told you to hit your sister? Or what if the babysitter told you to take your clothes off and take a shower with them? Or what if babysitter... And see, what I'm doing is I'm going from the probable, the things that they're likely to believe could happen, to the ridiculous, and making it more lighthearted, to the serious and the dangerous. And I'm teaching them not to be afraid, because in their world, the babysitter would never do that, and their experience with their babysitter is good. But what they're seeing me model is, it is possible that these bad things happen. And if they do, you need to know we will always support you. You don't have to obey, no matter who it is. And then you move to grandparents and Sunday school teachers and coaches, because our kids need to understand that just because they know somebody doesn't mean their character is good.
It just, I guess part of it just breaks my heart, Julie, because I think about the kids that have been hurt in those situations. And it was likely by, it's what you just said, it was likely by an authority that they were supposed to trust. And then that situation happened. What would you say to a children's ministry leader who is wanting to set up a safe environment where their kids can be discipled by loving, caring adults? What do we say to them? Like, here's some practical ways that you can set this up so that the kids in your ministry are safe.
Yeah, well, tons of ways. And so some of that just depends on situationally, youth group, Sunday school, VBS. But, you know, having multiple adults around, multiple adults engaged, a checks and balances system, equipping parents, saying this in our youth groups or with our children leaders, or to say, honey, you know, so-and-so is going to take you to the restroom, but here's the rules when you're in the restroom. You should have privacy in the stall. You should respect other people by not looking under the stalls, and nobody should do that to you either. And so there's just this ethos of, I'm not living in fear. I'm not alarmist, and I'm not teaching the kids to be afraid of walking into the bathroom or going someplace alone with an adult. But there is this mentality to say, you know what, in this youth group activity or in this activity, there's always going to be two adults. And you always should tell. If somebody asks you to go somewhere alone with them, tell another adult. So there's always eyes and there's always accountability. And we just, it's so natural, just the way you and I are talking about it. It's not alarmist and it's not something we're afraid of. It's something we're proactively engaging. So having the conversations, modeling that to kids, equipping parents and saying, here's how and why we do the things we do, are all really helpful ways to start. And then you start to get a little more practical depending on the situation.
That's super helpful. For anybody that's listening, there's a handful of resources that we've pulled together in addition to Julie's book. If you have not read it, obviously it's something that you need to do. Go grab that book, read it, and just begin to ask yourselves, where do I start with my family? And to kind of wrap it, Julie has this quote that she wrote that I think is so beautiful, that our goal is to raise equipped kids, not fearful kids. And we've heard that throughout our time together today. So go check out the resources available to you. We will link those in the show notes around questions you can ask your babysitter. You can read from Julie. So Julie, thank you so much for your time today. And most of all, thank you for your passion and willingness to have conversations that feel so, I think, intimidating for so many of us. So until next time, Julie, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
The Child Discipleship Podcast is powered by Awana. Thanks to the donations of incredible people like you, Awana partners with 62,000 churches in 130 countries to engage over 6.4 million kids in weekly discipleship. When you give to Awana, you are investing in the future of the faith. Young people who will engage the culture with the gospel and fearlessly lead the church. To make a donation to this mission, go to awana.org/donate. Subscribe to the podcast today so you never miss an episode, and check out the show notes of today's episode for relevant links from this conversation, as well as information about other podcasts from Awana. The podcast is mixed, edited, and produced by Brian Horn and hosted by me, Melanie Hester. Our theme song is Fresh Air by Christian hip-hop artist Josiah Williams and Hits by Jude. You also heard I'll Let Go, provided by Josiah Williams from his album Rerouting 2. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next week.